Welcome to Dakota Midday from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. Coming up later this hour, digitization is making historical documents available beyond the four walls of museums. And in particular, we'll hear about the State Historical Society's edition of Doan Robinson's correspondence to the digital archives. Plus, we'll talk with Kevin Kuchenbecker and Ivan Hovland about the firearms used in the settlement of the Black Hills. But first, it's Wednesday, time for a weekly discussion of the latest in state politics with the Dakota Political Junkies. And with us today is veteran journalist Kevin Wooster, reporter for KELO-TV's Rapid City Bureau. And Kevin, good to have you with us.
Great to be back, as always.
Also on the line is Jonathan Ellis, reporter and columnist for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. And Jonathan, thanks for joining the program as well.
Fun to be here.
Well, now that the primary elections are over, plans are getting underway for general election debates, and all four Senate candidates will debate on STPB-TV in October. Republican Mike Rounds, Democrat Rick Wyland, and Independents Larry Pressler and Gordon Howey have all accepted the STPB-TV invitation, and news came out from the Pressler campaign this morning that he's accepted an invitation to debate debate sponsored by the Rapid City Journal. Both Wyland and Pressler have said they want a lot of debates. And Kevin, how many debates do you expect there will be with all four candidates before Election Day?
Well, I guess I would be surprised if Mike Rounds doesn't agree to, you know, four or five at least. That tends to be kind of a standard to, for an incumbent or somebody that's the practical incumbent, which I think Mike Rounds is in this race, you know, in terms of the candidate. And I think there ought to be a dozen. We've suggested over the years when I worked for a couple of newspapers, and most recently the Journal here in Rapid, the idea of a Lincoln-Douglas-style debate series across the state between candidates that would actually go to some of the smaller towns instead of being usually in the bigger cities, and really open up the issues with some extended exchanges by candidates. And the more the better, obviously, as far as I'm concerned. But if you're the guy that's got the most to lose, you're always tend to be a little more cautious about that.
And that would be Mike Rounds?
Absolutely, yeah.
And Jonathan Ellis, how many debates would you like to see in a perfect world?
Oh, I think in a perfect world we would see many debates. I think that's important. That helps, you know, get voters engaged, I think, and especially as Kevin said, if you can get, you know, if you can have debates not just in, you know, Sioux Falls and Rapid City, but in other places, and get, you know, get people engaged in democracy, I think that's a good thing. But again, I would second what Kevin says. I mean, Mike Rounds does have the most to lose, and so he will limit the number of debates. Because, frankly, you know, Mike Rounds, I mean, by debating other candidates, Mike Rounds, you know, elevates their profiles, and that's not in his interest to do that. So, you know, I agree that, you know, you would hope to see, at a minimum of the standard debates that are done, maybe the state fair, public broadcasting debate, obviously, and some other ones. But, I would expect, Mike Rounds, he can't come across as a wimp, like he's dodging his opponent. So he does have to do a few debates. But it would be nice if there were a lot more.
Well, in the governor's side, Dennis Stuttgart has proposed four debates with his challengers, Democrat Susan Wismer and Independent Mike Myers. Jonathan Ellis, looks like that's the four that Kevin was talking about. Do you think it's possible at all that the governor would agree to more debates?
Oh, I suppose it's possible. The four that he's agreed to, you know, the Dakota Fest, the State Fair, public broadcasting, KELO, those are sort of traditional debates. There probably would be some invitations from other groups, certainly. The governor indicated that when he ran, he was back in 2010 against Scott Heideprim, that he had many more appearances, whether they be debates or joint forums with Heideprim, but he noted at the time that he was basically running full-time and that he's got a job now, and that's being governor, so that's why he's not doing as many debates. But certainly, you know, there would be many groups out there willing to sponsor debates.
Kevin Wooster, do you think the governor is, that's a legitimate comment that, you know, he's governor now, he doesn't have time to debate as much as he did before?
Well, he's certainly a busy guy. You better be busy when you're doing that job. And I think the fact that he's looked at these major debates and said, sure, indicates that, especially this early in the campaign, that he might be open to a couple more. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if he'd end up doing 5 or 6 or 7. He's a guy that tends to believe in fairness, I think, and after you come off a primary where you want 80% of the vote and you're a Republican in a Republican state, I think you can feel comfortable being fair about debates a little more than if you think you're going to be in a real dogfight, and that might hurt you to get in and mix it up a little bit. But I sure expect to see him maybe agree to a couple more. And, you know, I'd love to see some new proposals. I like the fact that the Rhapsody Journal is trying to work themselves into an area where they have a regular debate sequence. I think media outlets ought to work that as much as they can. And I'd like to see some of the smaller papers try and get involved, maybe team with a local radio station or some groups like that, and really kind of put some pressure on some of these candidates to go to Mulbridge or go to Winter or, you know, go up to Sisseton and Watertown, or, you know, move around a little bit, get out and give people a chance to meet you and see you debate issues in person.
Jonathan Ellis mentioned Dakota Fest. Is that really the sort of the kickoff then for debates? Will we see any before then? That's what, in August?
Not that I'm aware of. That is sort of a traditional kicking off of the political season, really. You know, usually there's after the primaries and the convention, there's usually a little downtime, and then Dakota Fest sort of, you know, things start to ramp up, and that is a traditional kickoff point.
Well, going back to the Senate race, what's interesting there are two independents and who have previously run and served as Republicans. It would seem on paper, perhaps, that they would take votes away from Mike Rounds. But as we look a little bit more into that, Kevin Wooster, doesn't seem that is necessarily the case.
Well, I definitely think they both take votes for Mike Rounds. I guess the issue is how many. Certainly, Gordon Howey, especially if he gets help from Stace Nelson, is gonna eat away at the conservative voter base, who really would like another option anyway. And there's going to be disaffected Republicans that would sit more in the, you know, the mainstream line, and they just don't particularly like Rounds. They may have had some incidences with him when they didn't like what he did or how he handled something. But I also think Larry Pressler, especially with his drift back towards what I believe are kind of his populist roots that he exhibited in the 1970s, and he's going to take some Democrats, too. How many on each, I'm not sure. But they're going to have an impact, and I think it's going to be fascinating to watch.
Jonathan Ellis, what do you think that impact will be?
You know, if Gordon Howey were to be able to access a lot of funds and get his message out, and this is the same problem that some of the primary opponents had. They just didn't have access to money to get their message out. If Gordon Howey had that, then I think his impact would be a lot bigger. So we'll, you know, have to wait and see how much money he can raise. I have talked to several Democrats who have told me they're supporting Larry Pressler. The reason being is that they just think that Rick Wyland is just too far to the left for them. So that's interesting. That's anecdotally that, you know, Larry Pressler's, you would certainly expect him to take Republican votes, but I he's going to take some Democratic votes too.
Coming up later this week, Republicans hold their state convention in Rapid City, and delegates at the convention will choose a candidate for Secretary of State. There's State Senator Chantel Krebs from Renner, north of Sioux Falls, and then Deputy Secretary of State Pat Miller, who has some roots in the western part of the state. Kevin Wooster, do you see any of those candidates having an advantage going into the convention?
Well, I talked to somebody that's kind of inside the party that thinks it may be close to 50-50 going in without a sure idea of who might be the favorite, because these are both pretty good candidates. You know, the party is obviously looking for somebody to kind of patch things up after the whole Jason Gant sequence, and both of these would be able to do that. You know, Chantel Krebs brings a different perspective from the Renner Sioux Falls area, and Pat Miller, obviously, with her position already with the office and with her connections to West River and things, and a long time party member and active a well-respected person. I think that's a fascinating match, and I think it's going to be really interesting to watch that. It'll be one of those things that really, in an otherwise kind of a ho-hum process, I think this one could provide some real interest.
Jonathan Ellis, do you think the location of the convention will have any impact on who eventually is chosen?
Yeah, I mean, there's some thought that geography favors Pat Miller in this case, that, you know, that there'll be more, obviously, West River delegates because they're closer to home. So there is some thought that will happen. You know, and I've heard concerns, I guess, we were referencing, you know, Jason Gann. I've heard concerns from some whether or not Chantel Krebs is simply just another, you know, politician that lacks, you know, the experience to be a good administrator of that office. So I think that's something Chantel Krebs has to try to overcome. You know, the fact that Jason Gantz, you know, had gone from the state senate then to become Secretary of State, whereas he didn't have, you know, any experience in the office. And so I have heard that there are some concerns among people. You know, Chantel Krebs is just another example of that. And at least Pat Miller, she hasn't worked in the office all that long, but I think, at least from some people's perspective, she has that experience in the office.
Well, next week, Democrats are meeting in Yankton for their convention, choose candidates, including Secretary of State, Attorney General, and the other constitutional offices. At this point, Kevin Wooster, do we know who any of these candidates could be?
Well, they're going to be somebody who would nod their heads at the big neon sign on the door that says, take one for the team this year. You know, I mean, it's very difficult to win those offices. The Democrats have had some success at a couple of them in the past, but it's tough. It's hard to raise money. It's an uphill climb. And my understanding is that they're going to fill them, that they're going to have a candidate in each one, and they should. You hope they would. I wouldn't expect to see much in the way of competition between Democrats. They're going to try and avoid that so that whatever funding they can raise won't be an issue, and there won't be any hard feelings or anything like that. But it's hard. I haven't heard anybody, maybe Jonathan has, down that way, that's likely to be a big name coming out of that process.
Jonathan, have you heard any names?
You know, and I'll give credit to Bob Mercer here, but he reported a week or so ago that potentially that, and I hope I'm pronouncing her name, Angelia Schultz, who was lost a primary for state senator, that she was potentially, and I haven't talked to her myself, this is just what I saw reported, that she was potentially considering running for auditor. So that's one potential candidate. But again, you know, Kevin's correct. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be show up for the convention and draw straws, basically, because much like it probably was, I think, last time around, too. It's just tough right now with the Democratic Party in its current condition. You really are sort of taking one for the team.
Well, Jonathan Ellis, what would it take to change that situation? Well, I'm guessing that's something the Democrats are talking about or have been talking about for some time now.
Well, you know, a lot of people who run for office, whether it's city council or state legislature, encounter the problem of people are fixated on national issues. And with South Dakota being a Republican state, people are fixated, tend to blame the Obama administration for a lot of problems, and Democrats in local races sort of suffer because of that. You know, again, people, whether it's city council races, you know, I hear candidates going door to door and they're having to talk about national issues rather than, you know, local issues. So really, I think the electorate is very nationalized, focused on national issues, and the Democrats suffer in local races because of that.
Well, going out to Rapid City, there's a recount in a state Senate primary race. David Johnson lost by some 30 votes to Republican incumbent Phil Jensen. Kevin Wooster, is it likely that a recount will reverse that result?
You know, I know so little about recounts. That was a close vote, or a close campaign, obviously. David Johnson, especially for a newcomer, ran a really good campaign, and I think Phil Jensen hurt himself a little bit with some of his controversial statements, but he campaigned hard. I saw a lot of signs and a lot of people out working for him, and it was something like 1234 to 1200 or 1204. which was actually more than he, the David Johnson actually would have won the primary against Jensen in 2012, I think, by 100 votes or so, if he'd have got that many. But who knows what's going to happen? I know that this is becoming, the general is going to become a pretty high-profile race around here, just because of Jensen's profile and the fact that the Democrats would really like to get him, and frankly, some Republicans, as evidenced by the support that, that David Johnson got, would like to as well.
And Jonathan Ellis, do you see this as a race that's being watched out to Sioux Falls, out East River as well?
You know, for people who are certainly engaged in politics, yeah, I think Kevin's right that it's I mean, I don't think the recount, you know, is going to change the outcome of that, but I think it will be one of the more high-profile races, definitely.
Well, also in Rapid City, earlier this week, the city council voted 8-2 to reject the mayor's choice for police chief. Kevin, why was the council overwhelmingly opposed to the mayor's pick for chief?
Well, I think it's one fellow here told me, don't tick off the police department if you're a mayor. And I think that's kind of what Mayor Quaker did in terms of there's kind of been a line of succession and a way of preparing chief candidates that's been done here for quite a few years. And former chief Craig Deason, who's now a state senator, and then followed up with former chief Steve Allender, who just left in May. And a fellow named Carl Jagras was kind of seen as the guy they had been grooming, and he'd been an assistant chief, and he acted as interim chief when Allender had been gone. And Sam Quaker came in and picked a lieutenant, which is a little bit unusual, too, although Sioux Falls had done it as well at one point anyway. And I think there was already kind of a divided council, and there's some Quaker supporters and some that aren't. And this got to be a little bit political, and Eli Diaz, the lieutenant, is a guy that goes to Mayor Quaker's church, and there's some family connections there. And some people were concerned about that, and also concerned about his limited supervisory experience. And it was a harder slam than I thought it was going to be. The vote I heard coming in late last week was more like 6-4, but 8-2 is pretty hard. So it'll be interesting to see what Mayor Quaker comes up with next, because Carl Jagras was one of the three finalists that the mayor received from a panel. So will he turn to him? Will he go another direction? Or will we have more interesting votes ahead?
So the next step is then Mayor Quaker has to pick somebody else?
I think that's a good question. Does he open things up again? Does he go back to the two finalists and select between them? Does he, you know, ask around a little bit? I got a sense yesterday from talking to people. He met with police folks and met with some of the council, a couple of the council members, that he's wanting to try and do something here relatively quickly. I don't think this is good for him politically. I think most people would agree that a guy that's very careful about his political moves may have made a misstep here that stung him a little bit. And it'll be interesting to see what the next one he takes is.
All right. Well, that'll have to do it for the Dakota Political Junkies this week. And Kevin, thanks for joining us today.
You bet.
And Jonathan, thanks for your time as well.
Yep, thank you.